from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, the House made some major changes to the Senate's campaign finance reform bill, and two senators say the bill will not be approved by the Senate with those changes intact. A rally over the weekend brings 6,000 citizens to the Capitol to speak out against the Republican-led initiatives they say will hurt workers across the state. And we'll talk about senior citizens' issues with representatives of the AARP on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Over the weekend, the House Judiciary Committee met to discuss a handful of bills, but most notably, the bill to amend the concealed carry law and a bill that reforms political spending in West Virginia. Liz McCormick reports.
Senate Bill 541 relates generally to the regulation and control of elections. Among the changes made in the House was the removal of all reporting requirements by third-party organizations. Delegate John Schott of Mercer County is the House Judiciary Chair.
Well, the changes basically were at the request of some folks over at the Senate, where my understanding was they had some second thoughts among the people that negotiated that bill. In this particular instance, we had information that some of the stakeholders had second thoughts about that provision of the bill, and so when we came out with our strike and insert amendment, we removed that from the bill. All we'd attempted to do with this bill was monitor or mirror the federal laws and make it less complicated, because rather than having two standards, we're trying to coordinate the two.
Democratic delegate Stephen Skinner of Jefferson County was not happy with the changes and wanted the bill to stay the way it was in the Senate version.
It stripped out all the requirements for public disclosure of donors of dark money organizations. That's one of the very good things that the Senate did, and it was done on a bipartisan basis. This bill was presented to us in committee without any notice, and it was rammed through. We asked for an additional day to take a look at the bill and understand what was in it, and we were voted down on party lines.
Senator Mike Romano, a Democrat from Harrison County, worked closely with Republican leadership in the Senate to craft the strict reporting requirements. He was also upset by the changes made in the bill in the House and says he will vote against them.
I'm very disappointed. The main compromise in that bill was to get disclosures of contributors to third-party independent campaigns. Those are the very nasty commercials that we see every election season, and we thought that by getting those disclosures, it would, you know, dampen down some of that negative rhetoric that seems to be polluting our elections. I don't know why the House did that, but personally, the bill was a compromise. The Democratic caucus did not want any increases in spending limits, and because we got those disclosures in it, we were willing to agree to the increase to the federal limits.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch Carmichael of Jackson County says he doesn't agree with the House's changes either.
It's my understanding that the House has moved to protect the anonymous speech with regard to some of those campaign contributions to the third-party entities. There's certainly a constitutional argument that can be made that disclosure is not required with those third-party entities. But if you're asking me from my personal perspective and from the sentiment within the Senate chamber, it is my absolute conviction that more disclosure is better.
Carmichael says he suspects if those amendments remain in the House's version, the bill will likely enter a conference committee between both chambers to discuss the final outcome. Another bill that came up over the weekend in the House Judiciary Committee was Senate Bill 347, removing the licensure requirement to carry a concealed handgun. The controversy over the bill amplified last week in a public hearing held in the House chamber. Ultimately, the House made some amendments to the bill in committee, most notably in the age limit. In the House's version, the age limit was increased from 18 to 21. This amendment was originally attempted by Senator Romano in the Senate, but failed. Both Senator Romano and Carmichael say they are fine with the increase in the age limit and think it makes sense to make the change. However, Delegate Skinner says he still has some concerns with the bill in its entirety.
Most West Virginians want a moderate approach to conceal and carry, and repealing the need within the state to have a concealed carry training and license, that's not moderate. And I think most West Virginians agree that we need to require some kind of training and a license for people to be able to carry a concealed weapon.
Both bills will soon see the House floor for their consideration. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
As we inch toward the close of this legislative session, lawmakers have sent 78 bills so far to Governor Tomlin. Some bills, like a repeal of the alternative and renewable energy portfolio, have already received his approval, while others were sent back to the House and Senate after a veto. Today, Tomlin ceremonially signed a bill passed by both chambers with bipartisan support. Governor Tomlin signed Senate Bill 335 into law, short-titled the Opioid Antagonist Act. The bill allows emergency responders, medical personnel, family, and friends to administer a drug that reverses the effects of an opioid overdose and can save a person's life. Opioids are drugs like heroin, morphine, and oxycodone, drugs that are commonly abused in West Virginia.
With the crackdown we've had on prescription drug, it seems the street drugs have become more and more prevalent in West Virginia. And basically, you know, heroin is the fastest growing one. So what we're attempting to do here is for those people who do overdose, you know, whether it be first responders, family, or friends, to be able to have this new drug on hand so that they can administer it, get them to the hospital where hopefully they can be revived. And we will not be losing over 500 people a year to overdose deaths in West Virginia.
A companion bill that would grant immunity for some minor drug charges to people who seek help for someone experiencing an overdose is stalled in a House committee. Tomlin says he'd like to see that bill make it to his desk. Another piece of legislation the governor is currently considering, Senate Bill 357. Supporters say the Coal Jobs and Safety Act of 2015 will help keep West Virginia's coal companies competitive, but opponents say the bill weakens safety measures. After an accident killed one miner and seriously injured two others in Marshall County over the weekend, Tomlin says he's still weighing the legislation.
We want to do what we can to be sure that we can continue mining operations in West Virginia, but we really don't want to cut back on safety. We got some of the best safety laws in the country. A lot of the national law is based upon laws we passed here in West Virginia. So I'll be taking a very close look at this bill when I consider it here in the next couple of days.
Tomlin says he believes there's room for give and take on both sides. A bill making its way through the House that would adjust campaign contribution limits was amended over the weekend, taking out Senate-approved reporting requirements for third-party donors. Tomlin disagrees with the House changes, saying he has to report every dollar received and spent in his campaigns and believes third parties should be required to do the same.
I think that those donors should be identified. You know, if I spend money on my campaigns, I have to say where I got the money, what it was used for, and who gave me that money. So, yeah, I think that it should be the same way for those people. If they want to contribute that kind of money, then step forward to be identified.
Tomlin also announced today another reduction in the amount of rainy day funds that will be needed to balance his version of the 2016 budget. The governor's initial budget projections in January showed the need for more than $68 million from the rainy day reserves. But Tomlin now says because of better than expected investment returns, that number has dropped to just $15.5 million needed to balance the budget. The governor's budget will not be approved by lawmakers as proposed, but Tomlin says he's working with the legislature to ensure funds pulled from the rainy day accounts stay below $20 million. A bill to repeal the state's Common Core education standards is still making its way through the Senate. Members of the Senate Education Committee discussed the bill today. While there was still debate over the standards themselves, members of the Senate have made major changes to the legislation since its passage in the House. House Bill 2934, as approved by the House of Delegates, called for a repeal of West Virginia's current math and English content standards by July 1 of this year and required the State Department of Education put in place new standards by the fall. State Superintendent of Schools Dr. Michael Martorano told members of the Senate a total repeal in such a short amount of time would destabilize education in West Virginia. A Senate Education Subcommittee agreed to extend the repeal by 1 year on July 1, 2016, in order to give education officials more time to write new standards. But the full Education Committee today approved a compromise bill that now removes the repeal. The committee's bill calls on the superintendent to create a comprehensive review committee made up of West Virginia parents, teachers, administrators, lawmakers, and union officials. The review committee will report back to the legislature by January 1, 2017, and suggest new standards that meet college and career-ready requirements to the State Board of Education for adoption. Superintendent Martorano says a review of the standards by 2017 is possible and what he's been asking lawmakers to allow him to do all along.
But overall, where we started with this process and where we are, I think it's a very thoughtful, engaged process to give it the time necessary, because this is a very heavy lift. This is a very important piece of legislation that ultimately defines the future of our young people. And I know there's been lots of conversation about this over the last several weeks, but at the center of my conversation is, how is this going to impact our children, my 280,000 young people that are sitting in classrooms every day, and how is it going to affect our teachers who are expected to implement and deliver the instruction based upon the standards of which we have in place.
Martorano says the state has adopted new content standards 3 times in the past 5 years. Ideally, he says, new standards should be adopted every 8 to 10 years to prevent a disruption in education and allow outcomes to be properly measured. A bill that the AARP is closely monitoring is House Bill 2100, the Caregiver Advise, Record, and Enable Act. Here to talk with us about this bill is Gaylene Miller. She's the State Director of the AARP, and Angela Vance, the Associate State Director. Ladies, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ashton.
Gaylene, let's start by telling us about this CARE Act. What does it do?
Well, you know, we know that caregiving is an issue that touches nearly everyone at some point in their lives. You know, chances are you know somebody who's a caregiver, you're either serving as a caregiver or you've served as one in the past. So as West Virginians, I think we take pride in taking care of our own. We know that there are over 300,000 West Virginians who are serving as family caregivers, and they're providing an estimated $2.8 billion worth of uncompensated care. So the CARE Act is really one common sense step that we can take to support those family caregivers.
Angela, why is the change necessary in law?
Well, as Gaylene mentioned, there are over 300,000 self-identified family caregivers. And we use the word family caregivers, but I think we should really use the word lay caregiver or just caregiver, because one of the really important things that this legislation does, it allows the patient to designate a caregiver upon admission into a hospital. And so once you make that designation in the hospital record, then the hospital staff and healthcare professionals can discuss your care with your designated caregiver. And then once you are going to be discharged from the hospital, the hospital will then contact your designated caregiver and provide you with education and instruction on your aftercare needs. And I think that that's the other really major crux of the bill, is that medical tasks are becoming more and more complex, even just basic medication management, that we want patients and their caregivers to be very well informed when they leave the hospital. They can transition to home, and they can hopefully prevent hospital readmissions.
Gaylene, this bill passed unanimously in the House, in the Senate earlier today, and the House is to reconsider it tonight. But if it passes, West Virginia is only the 4th state to have this type of legislation?
That's right, and we are delighted that West Virginia is leading the way in this effort to support family caregivers. Again, we know how important they are to our state and to our families. I think it's also important to note that individuals who do this kind of job, who take care of a loved one, are doing it out of a labor of love. So it's a really good investment. It's a smart investment on the state's part to invest in these family caregivers.
So, Angela, does that mean that these caregivers are getting paid in some way?
No, absolutely not. Lay caregiver is how it's defined in the legislation. And again, the family caregiver or the lay caregiver are really the unspoken care coordinators in today's medical world. And so we want to give the caregivers all the tools that they need to help their loved ones when they're at home. I think it's also important to mention the other states that have passed the legislation. Oklahoma was first out of the gate, followed by New Jersey, and our neighbors in Virginia just passed it just a hair before us. So,
Gaylene, I'd like to ask you about another initiative that the Senate Economic Development Committee has approved, and that would be to study the state's retirement options. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. AARP is part of a coalition of small businesses, entrepreneurs that are interested in looking at retirement options. So the coalition is called the West Virginia Coalition for Retirement Options. Very clever of us, wasn't it? Anyway, we know, heard from WVU at the beginning of the session, the School of Business and Economics, that only about half of West Virginians are working. An even more startling statistic for us was of that half, only about half of them are saving for retirement. So we are looking forward to working with the legislature and others, the industry, other interested individuals, including small businesses, about what options are out there to help it make it easier for small businesses to offer their employees a retirement plan.
And you know, part of that presentation included some research that we worked with small businesses on, and we know that they are struggling to provide their employees with a payroll deduction retirement savings option. And those are the really key words in that, a payroll deduction retirement savings option. People are much more likely to save when it comes directly out of their paycheck. So we want to make sure that every business in West Virginia, every business owner in West Virginia, has an affordable way to help themselves and their employees save.
Gaylene, what can lawmakers do in this area?
Well, I think there are a number of options. Again, states across the country are dealing with this. It's not just a West Virginia problem. So we're hopeful over the next year or so, based on this resolution that the Economic Development Committee has adopted, that we'll be able to provide them and explore some options that are available out there, whether it's a model coming from Illinois or something from Washington or other states that are dealing with it.
Well, Gaylene Miller, Angela Vance with the West Virginia AARP, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Now here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate and House tomorrow.
Up for passage in the Senate, House Bill 2586 at the request of the Supreme Court relating to service of process actions against non-resident persons by petitioners seeking domestic violence or personal safety relief. And House Bill 2914 to provide for voluntary dissolution of a resort area district. Among the bills up for passage in the House, Senate Bill 30, permitting shared animal ownership agreements to consume raw milk. Senate Bill 249, prohibiting straight party voting. Senate Bill 322, eliminating mandatory electronic recount of ballots. Senate Bill 366, the Patient Protection and Transparency Act, which requires information to be made available online to persons who purchase or are interested in purchasing insurance through the West Virginia Health Benefit Exchange or the exchange website operated by the federal government. Senate Bill 411, to establish procedures for the handling of asbestos and silica litigation and to enhance the ability of the judicial system to manage such litigation. Senate Bill 454, criminalizing trademark counterfeiting to help West Virginia's higher education institutions protect their intellectual property. And Senate Bill 574, relating to liquor sales by distilleries and mini-distilleries. On second reading, Senate Bill 336, eliminating the health care authority's power to apply certain penalties to future hospital rate applications.
More than 6,000 people gathered Saturday on the steps of the state capitol to rally in support of union workers in West Virginia and against many legislative measures making their way through the state house. From prevailing wage to charter schools, union leaders spoke against the new Republican leadership already beginning their push for a change in 2016.
If some people thought they could divide us, they were sadly mistaken, Mike, right? This is a sign that all of us are together. And believe me, when we're all together, we will not be stopped.
Thousands of union workers and supporters filled the Capitol steps and plaza overlooking the Kanawha River as West Virginia AFL-CIO President Kenny Perdue opened the rally. The 2.5-hour event featured both local and national union leaders speaking strongly against many of the legislative initiatives Republican lawmakers are pushing through this year. President of the National AFL-CIO, Richard Trumka, focused on the effort to scale back the state's prevailing wage law.
Last year, under different leadership, we raised the minimum wage and we raised wages for West Virginians. And this year, we ought to be talking about earned sick leave so that no parent has to choose between paying the bills and taking care of a sick kid. We should be talking about expanding overtime so that you get paid what for what you do, all of what you do every day. But that's not what this new radical Republican leadership is about.
The bill, which is being considered by the governor, changes the way the wage rate paid on government projects is calculated and sets a new minimum for when it can be used. If signed, only public construction projects over $500,000 will be subject to the wage rate. Another bill awaiting the governor's signature is the Coal Jobs and Safety Act of 2015. The bill received bipartisan support in both chambers, in part because supporters say the changes in regulation will help reduce costs for mining companies. But Joe Carter, a miner and vice president of the United Mine Workers District 17, says the bill will make the mines an even more dangerous place to work.
I've had the opportunity to speak to some of the leadership up here under the big gold dome. And I sat right across the desk and talked to a couple of them that are main leadership. One of them, you know, I told him I was there on behalf of the interest of and safety of the coal miners. And we talked there a little bit, and you know what? He looked across the table at me and he said, "Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Carter. I'm here to make sure that the coal companies are competitive with the rest of the world." And you know how he wants to do that? He wants to roll back safety regulations for coal miners, and he don't have a clue what kind of risk he's putting people in, what kind of a situation that he'll put the miners in when they move equipment with people in by.
Carter was joined by United Mine Workers President Cecil Roberts in speaking against the legislation. Standing side by side with laborers and miners, teachers and school service personnel from across the state also attended the rally to speak against education bills being considered by lawmakers. Christine Campbell is the president of the American Federation of Teachers, West Virginia chapter.
Our educators, the teachers, the school service personnel, all school employees, maintain the hope for our kids every single day. The only things we ask for are educational resources. And what do they give us? Charter schools that take resources out of our neighborhood schools and put them in the hands of corporations. We ask for professional support. What are they giving us? Alternative certification that allows any person to come in front of our children and say they can teach. That's we ask for the respect of our profession, the work that we put into this job every single day. And what do they want to do? Repeal our standards.
National union leaders, like president of the National Education Association, Lily Eskelson Garcia, say the battles over these same issues are happening across the country.
We will never have billionaire money. You would be shocked to learn how few billionaires actually work in an American public school, college, or university. Yes, I did an exhaustive search. I'm still looking for that billionaire third grade teacher. We only have one thing, It's all we have, it's all we've ever had, it's all we ever will have. We have each other. Thank God we have each other. It is all we need.
Ken Hall is from Lincoln County and serves as the General Secretary Treasurer of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. He says the fight to protect West Virginia workers' rights begins now, but is a long one that must last until 2016.
We absolutely have to keep this fight going. It's wonderful to see all these people here, but it's not going to do any good if we stop today. We got to send them a message in 2016 that if you are going to attack workers, we're going to be walking door to door to get you out of office. We have got to reward our friends, and I don't care what your politics is. If you are against workers, we are against you, and we're going to take you out of office.
Many Democratic members of the House, Senate, and executive branch attended the rally. Members of the Senate will vote this week on repealing the state's current education standards, and in the House, we'll have a public hearing and vote on charter schools. The bill to make West Virginia a right-to-work state died earlier in the session. This has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, the House Finance Committee holds a public hearing about Senate Bill 14, the bill to create charter schools in West Virginia. We will provide live coverage of that hearing at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning on WVPB2. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.